Blog Talk Radio.
Beginning of part 1. Please refer to program notes for the scheduled date and time of part 2. Thank you for supporting Prophecy Keepers Radio with your tax-deductible offerings to the Oklava Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace. Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Jossagonie, Will Blue Otter, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booker County in the mysterious Ozarks in mid-America. And today the show we have for you is
the Wolfman.
And welcome, Don Lobos. How are you?
How am I supposed to answer that, yeah?
I'm thinking. I want to think up on us.
Hey, Otter, what are you doing?
Oh, nothing much.
Yeah, well, anyway, this is Dr. Ghost Wolf talking to Blue Otter. And I think we were going to talk about some... We're going to get to a story on the Virgin of Guadalupe, because it's just an amazing story, and I've got some incredible real-life tales to add to it. But I think we were talking about some of the things that we're seeing in the news recently concerning Russia, correct?
Correct.
Now, what was going on there? They're moving to the underground cities in Siberia?
Well, there's a lot of military activity, and supposedly... there's been a lot of officials that have been moving into an underground city. See, it's been known for a long time that in both Russia and China that they have extensive underground preparations and food. You know, they have a civil defense plan in Russia and China. We don't. You know, it's almost like it's planned for them to survive and for us not to survive. And that's the way it looks. But anyway... you know, this is also coinciding with the seismic activity out in Kamchatka and a lot of...
Well, we have FEMA. Fools evacuating manipulated energy.
Yeah, right. So, anyway, so do your magic. Take us where you...
Well, I think, you know, also, I think one of the amazing things in that story it's not just the military that tells us there's something going on. It was that a lot of the wild animals are migrating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty incredible. You know, it's sort of like what happened before the tsunamis, where all the animals started to migrate.
Yep.
And up.
Yep.
Because there was, like, hardly any animal death at all, just a few dogs and cats.
Yep.
But all the elephants and all the monkeys, and they all knew, and they headed straight for the hills.
That feels interesting.
So,
yeah, kind of.
Again, you know, we got to watch.
Kind of makes you wonder, I mean, all that's going on in the interior rather than on the coasts. So it kind of makes you wonder what's going on in Russia.
Well, there is a lot of earthquake activity. The area that we're talking about they're migrating to is up by Siberia, correct?
Yeah.
And we know that Siberian shamanism has never dwindled. It's just sort of gone underground. And especially in the last, I'm going to say 15 years at least since 1992, when I did the ceremony with the Lummi for they did their first ceremony for the salmon, in like 80 something years. And we had a Siberian shaman come from Siberia to attend that. And it was like, I mean, it wasn't a big hyped up, promoted thing on the air or the media. They just knew and they came. All of a sudden there were these guys from Siberia. And they were telling us about, at that time, they were talking about the end times, and they talked about all these underground cities, that literally cities, city complexes that were built, and that they were trying to connect to these ancient caves. Once again, we're back to these ancient caves and tunnels, which seem to be established sometime after the first cataclysm, I'm going to say, before or during the Ice Age, which is how they communicated and traveled from one place to another. And, you know, I've never verified all of them. I verified the ones here in the Southwest to a degree. In other words, there are tunnels that go all the way from Bolivia all the way up to Canada. Okay? And like, you know, where I am in New Mexico, there are thousands of miles of underground tunnels everywhere. I mean, where I live over by Sandia, which is where they have that great strange laboratory up on top of the mountain, but they send everybody over to the restaurant and to ride the tramway to take your attention from all this bizarre stuff that's going on up there. I know they have an atomic pulse generator. Whatever that is doing up there, I don't know. It's sort of connected to harp and those kinds of elf frequencies, because the animals react to it. The animals either get really spooky or really depressed, and you're trying to figure out what's going on. You walk around here sometimes, and you feel like you're on Valium, and you're wondering what's going on. And I'm going to attribute it to those strange frequencies, because they're not constant. They're random. They come out at different times. You know? So, you know, what we know is there's a lot going on that they're not letting us know. And what we know is that a lot of the stuff that's going on has to do with this technology that they're always in official denial of. Well, we're not doing anything with that. And yet, on the second hand, they put out documents that say, control the weather by 2005. Because if you control the weather, you control the planet.
That's interesting.
And so we know that their harp waves and things are affecting the jet streams. We know that the barium and aluminum and other metals that they're spraying in the chemtrails that aren't there, they're not doing it. But that these things literally soak up all of the water, and then the jet streams move them. So, in other words, they can move water from one area to another area. They can make one area a desert and the other area a flood zone. So, but that's like a whole show that I think you should show graphs and things, because people just hear about that and it sounds like something out of X-Files. But the scary thing is, it's not.
Yeah.
It's probably all run by the Carlisle Group.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, all those...
Any names? No.
All those old James Bond movies, Dr. No, and, you know, all those old megalomaniac, all those old images start flooding back to you, you know. And,
they do, don't they?
Yeah, kind of interesting. Goldfinger and Dr. No and Thunderball and... really,
yeah, and, you know, and right now Sean Connery's doing the advertisements for, what is it? The Something 3 Network to communicate to the world. I'm sitting there going, this is like right out of that movie that you made, Impact, or whatever it was. Where you came in, you took over this giant communications frequency system. But, yeah.
Well, that was naughty.
We're all getting a little science fiction, isn't it?
yeah, it is.
So, speaking of science fiction, let's get on to a different kind of science fiction that I think makes a really good story. I'd like to take a minute, because not everybody knows the story of the Virgin of Guadalupe, which is the appearance of the Virgin Mary, the mother of Jesus, in Mexico. So if I can indulge just a few minutes to give people a background.
Absolutely. What was it you were talking about?
The Virgin of Guadalupe.
That's right, that's what I thought.
Well, the story sort of begins in 1523, which is just about 2 years after the Aztec capital fell to Hernando Cortez. And the story is around a little Indian man who was baptized then by the priest.
Juan Diego.
And his name is Juan Diego. And Juan Diego is on his way to Mass one day. And he's walking across a hill, and as he's walking across the hill, he's stopped by this blast of bright light, and from out of the white light steps this dark-skinned virgin, Madonna. She tells him, and she speaks to him in his Nahuatl language. And tells him that she is Mary, the mother of Jesus. And on this hill, Ipacal Hill, she tells him that she wants him to inform the bishop that they're to build a church here. And so he's a little bit thrown by this. And it's kind of hard for him to get an audience with somebody from the Rosicrucian order. But he manages to do that. And he walks in, and he tells his tale. And he tells his tale of how the Virgin appeared, what she said to him, and he discusses some of the conversations between he and the Virgin. The bishop becomes noticeably upset, turns around and says, how do we know that this isn't a contrived story? And so basically, you are to say nothing about this until you bring me concrete evidence. If you don't bring me concrete evidence, I will have you crucified as a heretic. So Juan Diego obviously becomes a little upset. He avoids anything to do with the hill and a reoccurrence of what happened. And then a few days later, this is like December 1st, 1523. On December 12th of 1523, no, excuse me, December 9th, 3 days later, his uncle becomes seriously ill, and they feel he's going to die. They send him out to get a priest. So, in doing this, he goes against his better judgment, and he takes a shortcut through what they call Tepeyac Hill. When he does this, the Virgin appears again, and she appears in this bright light, and there's a rainbow over her. And she asked him if he had completed the task that she asked him to do. He tells her what the bishop said, and that the bishop needs concrete evidence. Now, we have to understand that Tepeyac Hill is in the middle of this very barren desert Mexico landscape, okay? It's desert. There's nothing growing there. And she points over to a direction, and there's a rose bush. And she says, take him the roses from that bush. So he goes and he gathers some of the roses from the bush. He goes down to the church. He busts into where the bishop is residing. And he's got this armful of roses. And he says, he wanted proof. And so he casts the roses down at the bishop's feet. And the bishop looks, because this is December. Roses don't bloom in December. Okay? And the bishop looks at these things. And then there's this explosion of light. And Don Diego is wearing this sort of robe, this blanket that they put over them. Because it's December and it's cold. And it's white, so it's probably made out of lamb's wool or something. And this light appears, this rainbow appears in the middle of it, and then upon the robe is this image of the Virgin Mary, which becomes the Virgin of Guadalupe. That robe, the bishop, needless to say, the bishop did build the church. And that robe is still in the church. So it's 400 and something years old now, close to 500 years old. It has never deteriorated. Scientists have come in and done forensic studies on the robe, and it defies analysis. They cannot tell what type of pigment was used to put this on the robe. So this is the background story to the Virgin of Guadalupe, which happens right at the fall of the Aztec Empire. So I think that's a pretty interesting story.
It is.
Just there. And the fact is that the robe is still there. People can go look at it. It's sort of like the Shroud of Turin. And it has undergone scrutiny and scientific testing, and it defies analysis. They cannot tell what type of pigment was used to keep this picture on it, and it has never deteriorated. Okay? So when we get into these kinds of things, we see that miracles happen, sometimes based on faith, and sometimes that faith is not openly expounded by people. It's an inner faith, you know? It's like when you go down to the Yucatan, or you go down to Guatemala, or you go down to Belize, and you are fortunate enough to become intimate with the Mayan priesthood, you find that, in fact, the Mayan religion never perished. They have continued it. They do not walk around with anger in their hearts. And if you've ever been down there, they're just smiling, happy little people, okay? And the children are just incredibly creative. I mean, they never come up and beg you for money. They take little pieces of tissue paper, you know, and they make these little flowers. And they sell them to you because they don't have any other means of income. And I remember I was down there in 1999, the last time I was down there doing ceremony. And we went to this little town with Umbats. And I was there with him and Drundalo Melchizedek. And we were walking through this little town. And he was taking us to this underground grotto. And in this underground grotto was this lake that they used for ceremony. And at the very top of the grotto was a hole, like it let light in, okay? And we went down and looked at that, which was pretty incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, you're looking at hundreds of years of, you know, little things laying around where people have been doing ceremony for hundreds of years, so it's underground. It was pretty incredible.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Oh, see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Anyway, so I come out and the little kids are all around me because I got a cowboy hat on and cowboy boots, and they kept calling me Clint Eastwood. Hey, Eastwood! And so they all came up, and I didn't know what to do, you know, because like I was like there was like 30 of them everywhere, you know. So not knowing, you know, because when you're traveling across countries, sometimes and across borders, you know, money becomes a you don't know what it is. So I just reached into my pocket and I pulled out a bunch of coins. And all the kids came, and they gave me their little flowers, okay? And I just had this whole, you know, armful of little tissue flowers that they had made, all different colors, red, blue, yellow, white. And then I couldn't get rid of the kids. They were all getting very possessive, you know, and Humbus was laughing.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we see the survival of true spirituality everywhere we go, if we have the eyes to see it.
Well, it's like Don Jaime Perez was saying that, you know, a lot of times, you know, when the priest gets down and leaves, then they've got a special secret door under the altar, you know, and they'll bring out their ceremonial things.
To those. They do exist. And the Mayan priests still wear their traditional garments, shall we say. The particular ceremony that we did in the grotto, they had a woman down there, and she had to be in her late 80s, early 90s, and she started off speaking Mayan, and then she started off speaking all of these different names of saints in Spanish. And I remember looking at Humbus, and I said, with my American curiosity, I said, "Why is she saying the names of Spanish saints?" And he said, "You have to understand, Robert, that for 500 years, the language and to speak the language has been forbidden. So there's some language that they remember from talking stories. But the rest of it, when they run out of words to say, they just say the names of holy saints." Because I thought that was very curious. And here was this Mayan ceremony in the middle of a grotto in a cave all the way under the ground. And, you know, they were going through all this. So, you know, it was an amazing and dramatic emotional thing to see these people doing whatever they had to do to hold on to their spirituality. And I think that there's a lot of people today who, you know, some of the anguish that people go through is they have a cellular memory of things, but they've never been trained in how to do things. Because those ways have been lost. Now, as far as myself and personal experiences with the Virgin of Guadalupe, I'm going to go, say, back to 1994. I'm living on the island of Orcas, which is off the coast of Washington State. People who live on Orcas do not call themselves Americans. They say that we're offshore people. America's on the mainland. And we were doing Sweat Lodge, and I had my good friend Larry Kenosha, who is Ojibwa. He's part of the Midi Liwan Society, okay? Mm-hmm. He was in the lodge. The woman I was living with at the time and her two daughters were in the lodge. Grandmother Kitty was in the lodge. And there was another friend of Larry's who was an Ojibwa woman, Edna, who was in the lodge. Now, we're doing the Sweat Lodge, and the Sweat Lodge, I always, my spiritual Sweat Lodges, my High Lodges, my Nippies, I always have children build them. The adults work side by side with the children. This way the children learn step by step. And that's a fun experience because they always look, it'll never stand up. And then when you get through with it, they can, like, you know, lie over it and jump on it and do all these different things, and then they understand the geometry of how it was built, you know. And then it becomes a personal thing. Just they got involved with it. It's not just shown to them and crammed down their necks. And it's like, you know, they participated in it. They saw the ground from nothing and the things that happened, and now you go in and you pour the water and you sing songs and you say the prayers and things happen. And I think it gives them this personal thing with it that they'll never lose in their whole life. No matter what happens in their life, what experiences they go through, and maybe they all grow up and become realtors, lawyers, and computer operators. But they always remember that, you know. Children always remember those kind of magical things that happen in their life. Like the first time you ever went to Disneyland, you thought Mickey Mouse was real. So we're sitting in the lodge, we're pouring the water, and the smell comes in the lodge. Now, the way I can describe the smell, it would be if you've ever been in a primordial rainforest and you're around a place where the springs come up from the ground and all the watercress is growing and you have lily ponds and things growing naturally and ferns, okay, and willows, and there's a smell. It's a very earthy, I call it a musky smell. But it's not like a musky smell when you walk into a cave. It's a very living, organic kind of a smell. But it's sweet. It's sweet. And this smell started to come into the lodge, and it was dominated by a smell, of roses. Now, Larry sits there and he goes, it must be a buffalo calf horn.
That's a very high vibration. In the world of aromatherapy, there is no more expensive oil than rose.
Right, but this is that smell. Frequency. This is that smell. If you're over 40, you remember what Grandma's rose garden smelled like.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the roses today. This is that old rose smell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, a musky rose.
It's very light, but it permeates everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not heavy. It's not thick.
Yeah, you know? It's not real sweet.
And this is mixed in with this musky smell of, you know, this primordial rainforest spring with the ferns and the watercress and the willow and all the things that grow along the side of a creek and a spring. And that real black, mossy soil, you know, that's always there. And so this is mentioned. So Larry goes, it must be the buffalo calf woman. Now, the children can see her. The children can see her. We can smell her. And we feel something's going on, but we can't see her. And they describe her as this woman, and she's standing right over the rocks. And she is wearing a, she's dark skinned, she's got light eyes, and she's got like a veil over her head. I'm using, trying to use their language, not mine. And I'm like, okay. And so I'm trying to equate this to the Buffalo Calf woman, who I would assume would appear in white buckskins or something. And Kitty turns around and she goes, "It's the Virgin of Guadalupe." Now, it was the first time I was ever introduced to that, besides knowing it by name and not knowing what it was about, like a lot of people. You know, we go to the gift shops and the truck stops along the highway in the Southwest, and we see pictures of Virgin of Guadalupe. I live in New Mexico. There's pictures of Virgin of Guadalupe everywhere. Sometimes they even paint them on the side of their houses, okay? And she's the Virgin Mary standing in this halo. The halo is surrounded by stars, and there's a rainbow. There's always a rainbow around her. And she's standing above a child. Now, we can assume it's supposed to be the Christ child, but we also, if we talk to the people who are into this, it's supposed to represent the children of the world. And that she is the Sacred Mother. So that was the first experience that I had. The second experience that I had was in 1999. We're up in the wilderness of the Bob Marshall Wilderness in Montana. We're doing a ghost dance ceremony. Everybody's there. I mean, Apaches are there, Siberians are there, Japanese are there, Aboriginals are there, Blackfoot, Blackfeet, Apaches, like I said that, Hopis, the Hopi were there, the Hopi Sinem were there.
98?
Yeah, 99. And there, we have the lodge down by this river. It's on this huge 40,000 acre ranch right on the edge of the Bob Marshall Wilderness. And the lodge is down by the river. And the reason why we built the lodge where we did was because they raised buffalo on that ranch. And a buffalo cow had gone down and given birth right in that spot. Okay? So we built the lodge over the spot where she had given birth. And where we put the, when they give birth, they make like a little hollow. That they lay in and the little calf comes out, and that's where we put the fire pit. And you know, as a matter of fact, Arvel Wickenhorst was there. He was, and anyway, the women did the women's lodge there, and we had people stationed on two ends of the river, because in today's world, you have people who are not trained, and they don't necessarily know about respect. And sometimes they want to come down and see what's going on out of curiosity. You know what I'm saying? So you got to keep those people away. Not that they're bad people, they just don't know. They don't know any better. So we had one guard, so to speak, up at one end, and another one down the other end. And the other one was me. All of a sudden, I hear this ooh and ah, because after they would do the lodge, they would jump into the river, okay? And I'm hearing oohs and ahs, I'm hearing, oh my God. And I had to turn and look. Now, when you open the lodge, you know, it's real hot. So when you open the lodge, and in Montana, even in August, when we do the ghost dance, at night, it drops down 30, 40 degrees.
Uh-huh, that's dry there, too, so.
Yeah, and so, you know, you open the lodge, and all the steam comes out, right? And I'm looking at these women, and some of them are kneeling, and some of them are crying, and some of them are coming out of the river, and they're wrapping towels around them, but they're all stumbling, because right on the edge of the river there's all the rocks, so it's not that easy to walk sometimes. But they're all walking over, and some of them are kneeling down, and they're all looking in this direction. I look in this direction, and I can't see it all. What I see is a mist, and what I see is rainbow colors going through the mist, okay? And I'm like, wow, you know, what is that, you know? Is it a Northern Lights or something? What the women talked about when they got out of there was that they saw the very same thing that the girls described. There was a woman. She was tall. She had dark skin. She had a veil. And she spoke to them about the virtues of motherhood. Okay? I didn't go down there because I wasn't supposed to go down there. So I had to wait. So this was another experience. Again, I didn't recruit these things. I didn't look for these things. These things happen. And so I started to become curious about the Virgin of Guadalupe. You know, and then, of course, from my archaeological background and studying the ancient texts and doing things, we know today that Yeshua ben Joseph, the Nazarene, was an indigenous person. That he was tall, he had reddish hair, copper skin, and light blue eyes. And he spoke very simple Aramaic. One of the reasons why he had his apostles around him was that many times they acted as interpreters for what he was saying because he only spoke Aramaic. And that he was an indigenous person. So when you put these things together, it would make sense that when they saw the Virgin Mary, the Virgin of Guadalupe, she was of a colored skin. She was, shall we say, ethnic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she wasn't the white Anglo-Saxon Celtic blonde girl.
Well, when Wovoka saw Jesus at Walker Lake, he said, well, and you got, you know, the Paiutes are almost black, but that time they were very, very, very dark. And he said, well, he wasn't as dark as us, and he wasn't as light as the whites. He was kind of in between. And, and in the 30s, when John, the man that they called John Frum, appeared to the Tana Islanders at the time when they were being exploited by the French missionaries, this man appeared and lived with them for a year and told them. It was really, really interesting because I was watching ABC News Tonight back in 98, and Bill Moyers or somebody comes on and starts talking about, you know, the cargo cult and John Frum and this whole thing. Talks about this man that came to them and lived with them, and when they described what he, the first thing that he told them, it was almost word for word what Jesus had told Wovoka and what Wovoka had reported. And they said that he lived among them for a year, told them to remember their original religion and not to get suckered in by the missionaries. And he also gave them a drink to drink before they went into ceremony that kind of put them, it wasn't a drug effect, but it was just kind of it just kind of relaxed them a little bit and taught them some songs. They lived with them for a year and then disappeared. So yeah, he's not black, not white, he's in between.
Well, another curious thing, I mean, besides the fact that this robe has not deteriorated in over 465 years, and the scientists cannot figure out how and what kind of pigment was used to create this portrait, nor can they explain the quality of the portrait. I mean, the kind of artwork that Native Americans would have done then, or Mesoamericans, or Amerindian, we get lost in terms today. But the people who were down there, the Nahuatl-speaking people, did not have the ability to paint this kind of Sistine Chapel kind of portrait, okay? And the other amazing coincidence is that this hill, okay, this hill, Pipayac Hill, is the very site that the Aztec temple was built, dedicated to Tonatzin, who is the earth goddess, the mother of the god, and the protectress of humanity and children. Okay? It's on the very site that temple was built, and the Spanish, of course, destroyed it, which is why the hill was all barren. And again, there is a basilica that is built on the site today where this robe still exists. Anybody can go down and see it. And of course, there's a million stories about the miracles that happen when she comes into our lives. and sometimes maybe the reason why I'm going into this story is that, you know, those of us who believe in the Creator and who believe in the gentleness of life, you know, the lambs of life, we cannot lose heart in these times. Because if we don't lose heart and we just keep faith, and regardless of how you personally express it, it doesn't matter, my friend, how we express it, as long as we are genuine and clear with intent. And when we do this, we'll see the miracles. Things will happen, and doors will open that defy everything that you heard in the State of the Union message.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Did I get too boring?
No, you sure did. Yeah, so you didn't hear about this in the State of the Union matters, did we?
I got my own comments.
It's fascinating.
Here's the president talking to the U.S. Congress. He's talking to them like they're sixth graders.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, excuse me. Who do you think you are?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept waiting for the guy to say something. He didn't say anything. I mean, it was all hype. It was like there was nothing about anything. I mean, it was like a ridiculous speech on one level. I mean, you know, he didn't say, well, I'm going to do this, and we're going to approach this way, and this is what we're doing. Everything was like this propaganda media commercial for Pepsi-Cola, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or was that just me? Was that just how I saw it? You know?
Tell you the truth, I haven't heard it yet.
I do.
Yeah. You know, years ago, there was some prophecy I read somewhere that said that in the last, three, 4 years, that you'd want to turn off your TV, throw it out, shoot it, whatever, you know, to stop subscriptions to the newspapers and just go live, you know, they said, because the stuff that you'd be hearing would really disturb you. And I know this week, though, they've been talking about, you know, some really heavy-duty solar events. And I know a lot of people have really been agitated. Our animals,
a lot of intense solar flares.
Yeah, you know, I hear a lot about animals that, you know, my two little dogs, they get along famously, and, you know, they just, you know, they trade off on the bone, you know. Well, last night, you know, they're both laying down at the foot of my wife's bed, and they start going at it hammer and tong, and, you know, usually, if they ever do fight, they haven't had a, I mean, when the little dog first came into our lives, you know, less than a year ago, the old one had been around for 10 years, and there was some jockeying for position, but all of a sudden they wouldn't stop fighting. I mean, there's just and we're just going, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then we're hearing about our friends that are, you know, fighting with their spouses, and this doesn't usually go on. And, you know, so something's really been going on, and people, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, what is going on, and how, you know, people like Noah said that this kind of thing was going to be happening.
Very good point, because
yeah.
Noah talked about all of these train wrecks and things that were going to happen, and look at the news.
Right, and how the vibrations of Mother Earth is changing, and if we don't change with it, we're going to go...
Okay, let's just... Let's just come back, and we'll have one more closing statement on this, which is that in July of 2002, Juan Diego was canonized as a saint.
That's right. I was going to bring that up. It's fairly recent. And, you know, there's a lot of Mexicans that don't even believe he ever really existed.
Well, these people don't believe you and I exist.
Yeah, I know.
Some days I get up and don't know how he exists.
There's some people that like not to exist. I know that. Yeah, and
I wish I was corrupt, my brother, because I could make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I got a feeling, I mean, I just really have a feeling that we're just at the edge of things. Things are changing here.
Yeah, this week everything's gone wrong here. We, you know, we lost one computer to fire in the mid-December, lost another one to a mishap earlier this week, and we're running on a loaner. And a lot of people just, I felt like really isolated this week and depressed with all this going on. Well, the longer I know you, the more I can't believe.
Yeah, the longer you know me, the
less
you regret, right?
I've never met you personally. We've had a lot of things go, you know, between.
I've been down by your house.
You know,
you felt me. I heard you say to Betty, "That must be Wolf."
Oh yeah, you've been. I'm sure you've danced around my bed a time or two. And
well, I never do that. I would dance around. I'd always knock first.
Well, we've got a deep, lasting friendship, even though we've never physically shaken hands. People are going through stuff, and everybody needs to remember that the Bible talks about if you have fear during this period of time, you'll be caught in a snare. And it also says that things will happen that men's hearts will fail them for fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you go on.
Well, you know, but the thing goes in there that has to be inserted in that is that a lot of that stuff comes from dogma and religious propaganda,
mm-hmm.
where you believe what I say or you will go to hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And, like, you know, first of all, there is no place called hell. Let's get over this, okay? There's not one place where they're selling real estate called hell. You know, and if there is a Lucifer the way he was prescribed to be, well, Lucifer created the smell of roses, the sound of laughing water, the feel of soft ferns against your skin, the understanding of what silk was, and he taught people about hygiene and how to be clean and presentable. And so is this guy going to be the guy who takes on the job of taking care of every gang member and hooligan and criminal in the world? Like, what a boring job. Why would I do that if I was
there? Yeah, really.
You know, I mean, there's just things about the child fairy tale that don't make sense. And if we can get through that part of it, then we can maybe really start accepting the miracles. Because the miracles happen. And, you know, it's how do you get through this chaos and this depression? Well, you know, for years, remember, I have been talking about emotional storms.
Uh-huh.
While everybody was out there talking about earth changes and this is going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And once in a while, I do it, and I'll give you the stuff I think we did at the end of the days. It's all happening.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, why dwell on death? Why not dwell on some of the miracles that can happen? And how do you get through? What do you do? How do we prepare for this? And then when we try to talk to people about how to prepare, they accuse us of trying to marketing.
Yeah.
Earth changes merchandise. And the thing is, what is it going to take for you to realize you're at the end of the rope? This is the end of the movie, and if you don't start preparing for self-sovereignty, and you don't start figuring out what you're going to do with medicine when people get sick, and you don't understand what to do for pain when people break a bone or they have pain, when you don't understand, like, how are you going to prepare water that you can rejuvenate it and put it back into a potable form from the ground after it's all been, you know, polluted to the point that the fish jump out of the water and die on the shore.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, what is it going to take for people to realize that if you take 10% of the time that you waste on all this hula-bula stuff on the internet and television, if you took 10% of the time you waste watching TV and spent it in reading about some of this stuff and putting a garden in the backyard or doing something that creates an alternative form of energy, so that when you're sitting there and something goes wrong with the main matrix of the electric company and the power goes out, you got lights.
Uh-huh.
If you don't start doing a little bit now, well then what are you going to do when the shift hits the fan?
Uh-huh.
Because it's coming. I mean, this is not doom and gloom. I mean, I sit there and I watch Pat Robertson sometimes, you know, because I like to know what the enemy's doing.
Pat Robertson, Seven Hundred Club.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, okay, the guy's a good guy. Everybody's a good guy. Everybody's a good person. But it's like, you know, I remember this guy with Hellfire and Brimstone in the late '80s and the '90s, and we were all coming out with the prophecies and things and things that were going to happen. And he called us New Agers, and, you know, anybody who believes in UFOs should be shot. I mean, he made that statement.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and now he's selling videos about the very things that we talked about. The very things that, you know, Grandpa Wallace and people got out and talked about after they did their gatherings and their ceremonies, and they talked about to the people. They're doing these, you know, but you can now buy this end of days video for $29.99. And I'm like, okay, isn't this curious? You know, isn't that really curious, you know? So it's like, you know, people, everybody lost the original way.
Yep.
That's part of the initiation. Part of the initiation is we have to fall away from it. We have to lose the grace and the blessings of the teachings. We no longer have Grandfather David of the Hopi or Chief Dan of the Hopi sitting down or Grandmother Catherine sitting down and telling us what the Hopi said. We now have to remember it and find it on our own. We no longer have the Grandma Kitties and Pete Ketchus and Frank Fool's Crows sitting down and telling us about what the elders said and how it should be. That bridge is now dissolving. You know, they're not here anymore. We don't have Tom Brown. I don't think Tom Brown goes around. If he does, he must be ancient by now. Tom Brown was the guy who went around with the original Hopi prophecies, you remember?
Yeah.
And he was speaking up and down the west coast of America. I think there was a recording back in the 80s that he made up in Alaska.
Oh, Lee Brown.
Lee Brown, yeah. Tom Brown's the other guy. He's with Talking Wolf.
Yeah, we'll have that video up on the website here pretty quick.
And you know, it's an incredible story, and it's like I'm simply going to say what Grandpa Wallace said once. He said, "What do you tell these people after you tell them that this is going to happen and the flood comes? How do you tell them a new version? They keep wanting to hear you say something new, and you know there is nothing new." It's all been laid out. Everything that's going to happen has been laid out. And there's been new teachers that have come in that have expounded upon some of the ancient prophecies. there have been new movements to try to revive the ancient spirituality. And the ancient spirituality that is revived, that is real, how can I tell it's real? How can I tell if this guy's just not manipulating his personal agenda? How can I tell that this guy is not doing, you know, what is this Lakota guy doing in the middle of Delaware country teaching them Lakota ways of spirituality? And when I go and I talk to the Kadua back there, they go, and so we got to be janitor with the drum and clean up all these spirits that don't belong in our woods. You know, we got all these Lakota spirits running around here. Now, does that mean that I am maligning Lakota people who go out and do spiritual things and do inipi and that do real things and they keep their tone down and they do it quietly and they heal people and do things? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means that we have to learn the 4Ds in the 4D reality, which is discretion, discernment, involvement. In other words, we're of this earth, but not, we're in this earth, but not of this earth. And then we have to learn determination. We have to be able to move through this myriad of all of these teachings that are all scrambled together like an omelet and figure out what resonates in our hearts.
Detachment is probably the word you were looking for.
Detachment, yeah, thank you. It's been a long time since I've been there. So discernment, discretion, detachment, and determination. And the fact is, there's nothing anymore. There's no Frank Fool's Code going to give you this mysterious, mystical lodge and you're going to come out and know it all. You know, you may go into a sweat lodge with somebody, you may go into a nippy, you may go into a kiva, you may go into a sacred prayer teepee, you may go into an old cave with an Anasazi. And they may be singing old sing-song prayers. You may be sitting in there with a Tibetan Lama, you know? The point is, when the door opens up, you have to be prepared to embrace it in its simplicity. And one of the things that the elders always told us, always told us, was that unless you have the heart of a child, unless you have most pure mind, you will not hear. And so, you know, we grow up and we become adults, and the tax people are chasing us, and the mortgage people are chasing us, and the computers break down, and the car breaks down, and then you go in to get the computer fixed, and you find out that it costs you more to get the computer fixed than it costs you for the computer. And then you say, well, what about if I trade the computer in on a new one? And they tell you, well, we'll give you $25 for it. So, you know, you sit there and you get discouraged by all these external earthly things, and it colors the child. It locks the child away. And it's the child that knows how to take you to where you've got to go. It is the child who has always been with you. It's that quiet little voice inside you that has always said, why don't you go out and sit down under the tree? Just sit down under the tree. And you go, why should I sit down under the tree? And then you sit down under the tree, and all of a sudden a red-tailed hawk disappears right over your head. When we forget to listen to that voice, when we think that we have to have somebody's prescribed way, then we're going to have great difficulty trying to find it, because the Creator talks to all of us, every one of us, and He talks to us in a way and shows us things in a way that we can understand. It's always amazing to me when I've sat in rooms with great human beings who've spoken incredible things, and you walk out of that place and you start talking to everybody about what they heard, they all got a different story. You ever notice that?
Yep.
It's like, you know, it's like when the Spirit's moving through people and it's talking, it talks to each one of you individually. It's amazing. You just sit there and go, wow, I guess there's many ways to look at a buffalo skull. I didn't hear that. You know, but they'll absolutely hear it. And it's, you know, what is that Simon Garfunkel song? A man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. It's like we have to look for the little things. And one of the most important things in this time right now, one of the most painfully important things that we have to do, is get beyond our personal judgments, move beyond our personal agendas, summon up whatever is in us that is spirit and move beyond fear. If we move beyond fear and we move together and we start acting together, the whole thing about humanity is that humanity is supposed to live in commonality. Is that the right phrase?
Yep.
We're all supposed to work together. Six guys working on a field, you can get it done. One guy working on a field, you think that the earth is cursing you, and the sun is too hot, and there's not enough water, and the horse isn't listening to you, and the tractor's always breaking down. Six guys working together, and the field gets done. And after the field gets done, you sit down and you eat, and you drink. And
you wrote a song about it. Many hands make work light.
Yeah, you know. And, you know, the Christian guys run around and they go, you know, oh, this circle is unbroken.
How much folk know all about that ethic?
You know, I come from the Willie Nelson School. You know, well, they tell me about a place where the skies are blue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like we have to start working together. Everyone's got to drop their shit and start working together. This is not a time for the lone wolf. This is not a time for running off and proving your independence and all of that. That may be part of your rites of passage if you never went through it as a young person. And both women and men go through rites of passage. And there is no escape. The reason why in the old ways when we did things and we put adolescents through rites of passage, the minute that they hit puberty was when it was the time to go to rites of passage, so that they wouldn't have to deal with all of the pain and mistakes they would make along the way in life if they didn't understand how sacred and precious life was.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
How sacred life really is, you know? You never realize what you got until you lose it. You ever hear that blues song?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the thing is, you know, we live in a world, I think, where we see everything on the media being proven to be a lie, and all these big corporate guys are going to court, you know, but it's the little ones that go to jail. They put Martha Stewart in jail because I have Menron still running around. You know, what did she do? Give me a break. What did the woman do, you know? So she's loud. So she's arrogant. She's a woman doing business in a male's world where women are not supposed to achieve, okay? And she has achieved. But it's okay because she's getting out of Camp Cupcake, they call it. She's going to be leaving Camp Cupcake and she's taking over Donald Trump's role in The Apprentice. Isn't that wild?
Interesting.
But, you know, how sacred life is. Well, we take everything for granted. We take our relationships for granted. We take our... And relationships are something to be understood. Because relationship starts with your relationship with yourself. And if you're not your own best friend, then you got something you got to work on. If you're not your own best friend, you're not going to be anybody else's best friend.
Yeah.
If you're not your own father, big brother, little brother, mother, uncle, if you're not that for yourself, if you do not respect yourself, well, then how can you possibly respect others? You wouldn't know what it's about. You don't know what the experience is about. So we got to start with ourselves. And I guess this is a little bit Haudenosaunee, you know. Six Nations, but the family hearth, from the family hearth and the relationship that spins from man and woman becomes the extended relationship of the whole tribe and then the whole nation. And how that relationship is dealt with from the get-go, and when I say from the get-go, what I mean is how many people today get married, hook up, and they do the big wedding, and everybody comes, and they're buying flowers, and they're getting wedding gowns, and buckskin dresses, and doing the ceremonies, and worrying about the food, and doing all this stuff, and not 1 minute is spent, excuse me, on how we are going to develop this relationship. What is the purpose of this relationship? What do we want to see come out of this relationship? Now, some of that's hormones, but a lot of it is just not clear thinking. And then everybody winds up together, and then they wind up splitting up, and then they wind up walking around with hate and anger in their lives, and then they get tangled up with somebody else, and they get tangled up with them because of sexuality and not the things involved between talking to each other. Remember, when it's all over and the fireworks stop, you know, and the drums stop beating, you got to talk to each other.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have the ability to talk to each other, and you can't be best friends, and you can't constantly, I don't want to say support and then have it misunderstood, that means that everything you say, I have to agree with. Support doesn't mean that you agree with everything the other person says. I mean, you and I are going to be friends for life, but there have been times that you and I have looked at each other and say, where are you coming from? What friends do is they realize that when they reach that point, they have to talk through it. And then when they talk through it, amazingly, they reach a mutual understanding. And we've lost that ability. Everybody's fighting for, you know, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. But it's reached a point where relationships have become abusive, and we're in this constant contest of dominant and subordinate.
I think email, I read one back in 97, one elder said about email, he tried it, he said, this horse runs too fast. you don't see the person, you can't read their body language, and, you know, there's so much flaming and misunderstanding because people, 4 years and years and years and years, well, back in my father's time, you know, they were taught to communicate through writing. And it's like I was sitting 3 a.m. the other night watching this thing about the English language and how it evolved, and Gregory Chaucer, and
this guy started to recite the beginning of the Canterbury Tales, you know, Wandoff a Prela, and I was going, oh, this is what my dad used to talk about, and because my dad used to tell me what a crappy education we were getting, and they were taught to communicate in writing, and then you go for 60 years, and then all of a sudden email is introduced, which is instant written communication, and then the internet springs up, and all of a sudden people have to learn to communicate in writing again, and you have just massive hate fest going on, you know, because people really don't know how to write and sculpt.
Well, they don't know how to think.
Well, that's
you know, in order to write, you got to know how to think.
I have had a couple of experiences lately. You know, with one person came to me, was asking me about some things and talked about some personal things in their life, and I gave them some advice. And then they didn't like the advice, and all of a sudden they start to put words in my mouth, and now it's down to 3 and 4 generations. It all began with, I was saying, okay, you're a native person, you need to go to ceremony, you need to get a healing. And now 2-3 weeks later, they're writing a third person saying that I told them they all had to be good little Christians, and you know, and I'm going, you know, what is wrong with this picture?
Right.
You know, it's just absolutely amazing, you know, and oh man, it's just so maddening.
Well, because we've forgotten how to live in relationship.
Yeah.
You know, we have forgotten that to be human. I remember years ago, I went to a performance by Carlos Nakai.
Yeah.
And he spent the first 30 minutes of his performance talking about life and why he was able to play the flute and do the things that he did and things that he learned when he was younger, you know. And like we you know, when he was younger, he was taught by his elders that you're all born as two-leggeds, but you're not necessarily all born as humans. That to be human, you have to be accepted into the society, and you had to go through rites of initiation. Because you had to learn what it meant to be human. And to be human meant to live in commonality, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that when you live like that, that's what made societies that survived, changes in governments, changes in civilizations, changes in dominant race. I mean, we sit here and look at the Americas, and we are a very strange place, the Americas. The Europeans are still in denial that everything about their history we have written in our history on the stones and in the caves, okay? That when they came over here, they were not telling us anything new. We were just sitting there going, how come you believe it's all in the book? We know it's all over the place. I could take you to 100 places where you see that. And, you know, we move into, again, you know, I'm going to keep going back to the Haudenosaunee book, and I don't know what the name of it is. I don't even know if it has a name. But it talks about how the society is set up, how it starts from that family hearth, how from that family hearth you have grandma and you have grandpa. Grandma and grandpa have daddy and mom. Daddy and mom have the daughter and the son. And the daughter and the son then recreate the family hearth from its beginnings. And the family hearth is taught in a very strict way. And they had their society, where they had the warrior society, they had their grandmother society, and then they had their sachem, or spiritual society. And things were kept in specific areas. If you were chief of the tribe, well, that meant that you were chief of the tribe. It didn't mean that you were the sachem. It didn't mean that you were the holy man. It meant that you were the politician. You were the one who went in there, and when two people were fighting over a deer hide, you were the one who settled the dispute. That was your role. When it got onto the spiritual aspect of what was wrong, they sent you over to the sachem. And then you sat with the sachem. But all of these societies are like, it's part of, it goes to, how many parts of you are you? Is there a spiritual part of you? Is there a father side of you? Is there the little boy side of you? Is there the warrior side of you? Is there the lover side of you? is there the jerk side of you? Of course, anybody who does not admit that there's a jerk side of them won't hear anything I'm saying. Okay? Because they think that their stuff don't stink. And the fact of the matter is, everybody makes a mistake, and you keep making mistakes. Even when you become anointed, you still make mistakes. The deal is that you're willing to deal with them, you're willing to accept that you made a mistake, and you're willing to do the hardest thing that anybody has to do, which is to admit that even though you thought it was right, maybe there was another way to do it. Now that's real hard. You know, and it's the soft heart that becomes the strong heart. I remember when I mentioned earlier in a misnomer, and I'm sorry, Lee Brown, I mentioned Tom Brown. And Stalking Wolf was a real guy. Stalking Wolf is not a make-believe entity. And I remember Stalking Wolf, one of his teachings, where, you know, you have to accept your own fallacy and your own folly to become a warrior. Because when you do that, you become mutable. And when you become mutable, you become human. And when you become human, you can change. And when you change, you become like the river. And the river is always different. Thus, it's always the same. The river always remains the river. When you become like stone, you shatter. You know. Speaking about old things like that, you and I talked a lot about No Eyes. Remember No Eyes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, No Eyes was brought about in the teachings publicly about No Eyes. And she was a, do we call her Chutwa or Ojibwa?
Ojibwa is from Mary Summerine's teacher.
Okay. Well, to those people who want to say she was Chutwa, I'm sorry. I was taught also she was Ojibwa. And she talked about these times that we're in. She talked about this struggle between who we are and the fact that when you're good, you have the dark tumblers that come after you. You have the dark forces that jump on you to test you. She talked about these times in specifics. When she talked about there'll be accidents in amusement parks. There'll be many, many train wrecks. Now, I think just in the past week, on the media news, there was at least 5 major train wrecks. I mean, major train wrecks, okay? And, like, she talked about planes falling out of the sky and everything starting to break down. She talked about the emotional storms that would come. And I remember when I was young and learning and thinking that everybody out there had the seed of good, I listened to these things and I said to myself, this is going to be the problem. The problem is going to be, how do we heal the people? Later on in life, Grandpa Wallace used to say to us, the hardest thing that we have to learn is we're janitors with a drum. We have to go around and correct everything that's wrong. So all we are is janitors with a drum. And the hardest thing we're going to have to do is to correct the human mind. Because it doesn't think right anymore. He used to say, we lost our drum. We lost the beat of the drum. We lost the drum that we used to all hear. And, you know, I think now there's a lot of truth to that. We don't listen to the drum anymore. You know, like you're talking about this internet writing back and forth. It's not writing. It's emotional expounding. It's shooting from the hip. It's like, you know, whatever hits you in that moment, you say, and you go, oh my God, why did they say that?
Oh, yeah.
And people have, like, they're absolutely vicious. I mean, I sit there, I don't do chat clubs. I mean, I get invited over here. Could you come and talk to us? And I say, no, I don't do them. Because what happens is, if I say something that you and your programming and your dogma does not accept, If I say something that you're in denial of, if I say that you're an asshole for beating your wife, and you're trying to justify beating your wife, well, then you're going to get up on that chat club, and you're going to fire all this bullshit at me, because I'm putting you in the light.
Now, this is really interesting, because the last time you came on, I had a fellow from St. Louis contact me, and he was all complaining about, well, you know, I'm offended at what Dr. Ghostwell said, because, you know, any true Christian understands that it's not that way. And I wrote him back and I said, well, I said, if you were a true Christian, you would not be offended, because Jesus says, be not offended. You know, that was what I started to teach the guy, you know.
True Christian, that's a funny word.
That's a funny word, isn't it?
You know, a true Christian. I don't know any organized religion that follows the true teachings of Yeshua ben Joseph.
Here.
They talk, Yeshua was compassion and loving. He was understanding and healing. He was the epitome of male and female in one embodiment. He judged no one and no thing. And he spoke in great wisdom. I had a conversation the other day with a bishop, because, you know, what some people may not understand is that I am an ordained, credentialed minister, okay? And I'm also in the apostolic order. So go research what that means. That means that me, like Sir Lawrence Gardner, can go into the Vatican and go into the libraries, okay?
You're in the apostolic order that comes down from Thomas. And I've seen
all the way down from Thomas. So it's all about the apostles.
Yep.
And, you know, my belief in Christianity has got to do with, what did Yeshua teach? Because I looked at the Bible, and like I was talking to this bishop, and I was going, where are the teachings? I see the stories, but I see about 2% of the teachings. Where are the teachings? And the teachings of you know, true Christianity. That's a funny statement, because like a true Christian tries to make themselves as the Christos. A true Christian tries to make themselves as the Magdalene. Because people, there was a Yeshua and there was a Magdalene, and they did have children, and there's historical records that validate it.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Now, it's probably going to take everybody 10 generations to accept it, but I don't care who accepts it. It's the way it was. It's historical fact.
Well, he said that he obeyed every jot and tittle of the law, which means he had to do. They called him rabbi, but you can't be called a rabbi unless you're married. And, you know, you would be betrothed, your marriage was arranged. And then by the time you're 18 years old, you were
married. Well, not only is your marriage arranged, but when you have sex is arranged, when you eat is arranged.
Yeah, yeah.
How you live your life and when you go through different things is arranged. This is how it's all arranged.
There could not have been any other, you know, the way they look at it still is that if you don't get married, you are committing murder because you're not bringing souls into the world, but you're literally killing.
Well, now you sound like a Baptist.
Yeah, well, no, that's
we're going to have to watch that.
That's the way the Jews kind of look.
According to the Baptists, nobody's going to heaven but them.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're going to do when they get there, and there's this whole big crowd standing in front of them.
Well, they're going to go up there and see all the fields.
And then how are they ever going to explain the fact that Jesus was in Tibet?
That's right.
And that Jesus in Tibet, which is where he got his name, Sananda. And Sananda means the Ascended One.
Well, the Dalai Lama, just a few years ago, said, we own your Jesus.
After the resurrection, and people, we have to understand that there's a misnomer going on when we say that Jesus died for our sins. This is a really strong statement. And I'm probably going to get 13 guys with spears coming after me. But I don't care. Because Yeshua did not die, he ascended. Yeshua became an immortal. He went through all of the initiations of all the mystery schools, from the Druid to the Tibetan to the schools of Egypt to the ones that nobody knows about, so there's no point in mentioning them at this point. And then from there, he moved his ministry to the world, exactly as he said to the apostles when he said, there are other sheep in my father's mansion.
He told them, go to the lost sheep of Israel. Jesus.
And so then we go into all of the stories of the Pale Prophet, of Kosikoto, of Wekoma Tepe, all these different names that he had here in the Americas, and all of the travels through back through Tibet, back through Siberia, through New Zealand, through Hawaii, into Tacoma, Washington, the journeys that he made down to the land of the Maya, that he made back up to Hudson's Bay, that he made to the Haudenosaunee. These stories go everywhere. And if you want to find out about it, well, read He Walked in the Americas.
Right, Tlacomo was one of his names.
And right. And
so was, and his symbol in his hand was the hand Kabul. And I live in Kabul, Missouri, and there's this story about an Indian chief that lives here named Kabul.
Well, keep in mind also that one of the symbols of the ghost dance is the hand held up with the cross in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that symbolizes the nail hole. And that's a symbol of the ghost dance. That comes right from Wovoka and the people that were there. And they came to meet Kanishita Kanishiwa. Kanishita Kanishiwa, the great white chief. And the first one who appeared at the ghost dance was not Kanishita Kanishiwa. And he told them that they must continue the ceremonies. And then the whole ceremony was enshrouded under a strange orange cloud for days. And this, people, is not something coming out of Dr. Goswell's mouth. This is recorded
in the newspaper,
the Boston Globe.
Yep.
Go into the archives.
That color orange and the smell of orange blossoms is associated with
the Christos too. Like Rose is associated with his mother.
But he did show up. And, you know, for another time in another place, we can go into other mysterious predictions or prophecies about the appearance of the Christ, that he would appear again, and the fact that he did. The fact is, it was prophesied in the Christian religions that he would appear in 1890, and he did. He just didn't appear to them.
Yeah, Joseph Smith said that he would show up if, you know, in 1890, but he didn't.
Well, yeah, and like I said, we can get into the details of that. It was also
that
in that time, in around that time, a prophet would appear.
Yeah, so
and the fact of the matter is, Joseph Smith was a prophet. And the original teachings of Joseph Smith were in total accordance with the universal teachings of the Christos and the self-prophet. But my information comes from Native Americans, doesn't come from Christian doctrine. Even though I am a Christian minister, I'm one of these blessed radicals.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the term blessed radicals because I still have my head.
Mm-hmm.
Because truth is truth, and the greater truth can only open up the greater story. And the Pale Prophet appeared to many people in this land. And the testimonies to that are still written in stone. And I'm an archaeologist, so I know what that means. Okay? There's legend and there's myth, and then there's written in stone. And when the legend and the myth are authenticated by the story written in stone, that means it's the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even the way they teach you in seminary school.
Right.
I went to seminary school. But I was one of these guys who always asked embarrassing questions that they would just tell me to shut up, you know. And I said, well, I just have to figure it out, you know. The thing here is that, you know, we're now moving into a time. Why are we having all these emotional conflicts? Why are we having all these pains? Why are we having all these doubts? Why are we having, well, we have to understand that there's this little thing called the emergence. And in the emergence,
the birth pain.
If you can picture two glowing globes, one is one level of consciousness and the other is the Christ level of consciousness, and they're merging together. Well, the merging together becomes the great purification. And in the great purification, there can be no lies, there can be no deceits, there are no secrets. One of my teachers said, what would you do in a world where there were millions of Michelangelos, millions of St. Thomas Aquinas, millions of Quetzalcoatlus. What would you do in a world like that? That's part of the Christos. That's part of the purification. And in the purification, we go through the struggle of where that which is false, which became the written word, which is why the indigenous people around the world do not write their stories in words. They repeat them, and it's the indigenous peoples around the world. This is an important thing to understand. Everything is done in an oral tradition. Now, where did the oral tradition come from? Where the oral tradition came from, in its basics, is that if I speak a certain dialect, there are certain nuances and intonations in that dialect. That dialect may have as many as 10,000 different enunciations and nuances. But each one of those and nuances and intonations are precise and exact, and they mean a specific thing. Now, when you can't understand the language, like the people who don't understand Spanish, all it sounds like is a poco de cromo, de oros, de aros. They go, what are they saying? Because they don't understand the nuances and intonations. Okay? So when you speak the oral dialect, what happens is those nuances and intonations have to be precise. If they're not precise, the story's not truth. So, for generations and generations, and they still have it, and yes, I promise you, I will send you the tapes from the last Haudenosaunee thing that I attended, where they did the whole story of life. You know, it's like 7 tapes, and they do it every year. And the Mayans do it, and the Baptists, I know the Cherokee, the Ketua do it. So I'm assuming the Ketua do it, the Ketua and the Ketua, one with the D, one with the T. The Ketua being the Western branch of the Cherokee, and slap me if I'm wrong, and the Kadula being the Eastern. and they still recite all these things orally.
Uh-huh.
And it goes all the way back to a, to the Bach, which I should get you in contact with Stuart Rice on Hawaii to tell you the Bach saga of the original root race, the fodder race of Earth. That goes in and ties us all together. Now, they don't have all the answers either. But they have a large part of the deck. Whenever Stuart hears people talking, he goes, the problem is you're playing with 50 cards. They're not playing with 52. And if we put it all together, and this is what this time is about, you know. We're in this time now where the pages of history, the pages of prophecy, there's a blank spot. We can sort of see what happens afterward, although it's kind of foggy as to why it happens that way and why these different kinds of events happen, and some of them are so radical to the other. And then up until about 1994, everything was methodically, linearly the way it happened. And then we go into this blank spot where even the Hokies say, there's nothing written. There's nothing written. If we go away from what the Hopi and the traditional elders say, and we go to the Montauk people, tell us that when they would travel to the future, when they would do these different things, there was this blank spot that they couldn't get in. We're in that blank spot. And the blank spot is where we're literally writing our destiny by living it. This is the part that scares people. This is the part that makes people fearful because they're unstable, because they're listening to all of the dogma and they're going, it doesn't work. It doesn't apply. And so they're walking away. And then we're seeing all the dark side of everybody and we're going, the world is evil. The world is no different now than it has ever been.
That's right.
It has always been this way. It's just that now you have media. So now, in 7 seconds, you can see about what this pedophile did somewhere to some young child somewhere, and you go, the world is evil. It has always been this way.
It's just that we're just noticing more now.
Correct. And we have always had a struggle. That's why the elders used to say, when you walk down the good red road, it's a narrow road. But it's the road to forever. Well, being a minister of the Golden Braid, being a minister who understands the both sides, being a minister who was taught by the elders about the Tao Prophet, did not Yeshua say, I am the way, the truth, and the light? It's walking the narrow road. And you have to, and then the teachings of the great ascended masters was you always have to walk the middle road. Edgar Cayce said you have to walk the middle road.
Uh-huh.
And people used to go, what do you mean the middle road? You mean I don't feel anything? You mean I walk in the middle? I don't commit to anything? No. The middle road means you're walking in a world where there are extremes. Wherever you go, you will hear one intellectual argument versus another intellectual argument.
Martin Luther.
You'll hear one argument of faith versus another argument.
Martin Luther said that moderation in all things.
Right. So you walk through the middle. Like Edgar Cayce said, give yourself a break. Nobody told you never to eat bacon, just have a little. You know? No one told you never to have a glass of wine, just have a little. Walk in moderation. Never give to either polarity.
Right, he used to smoke a few cigarettes a week because he knew a few were good for him, but, you know, we're talking one or two or three, maybe one a day, you know.
Not a bad day, he probably smoked countless.
Yeah. Well, I'll turn it a little, not to get off track, but you know, Mormons got this thing about not smoking. Well, there was one...
I also have a thing about not drinking coffee.
Well, B.H. Roberts, I mean, this guy, I mean, he was just... I mean, you had to peel him off the ceiling, you know, and at one point, this is, you know, turn of the century, and this is after the Word of Wisdom came out. I mean, the first president called him in, and they said, Brother Roberts, you know, in your case, we're going to ask you to violate the Word of Wisdom. We want you to smoke one cigar every day. It will settle you down. So go on, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, but you see how this dogma has been created to knock people off the path.
Yeah.
Because they ask you to achieve an impossible goal, to not be human.
Yeah.
To deny everything in you that's human. And to go on to this goal, you have no other choice but to fail. And why would the God of gods, the creator of all things, the mother, father, God of everything that is and will be, why would they create a situation where you were never given a rule book, you were never told what was wrong until you made the mistake? And then when you made the mistake, you were just simply condemned to hell and they went down the road. It sounds like Donald Rumsfeld to me. That's not what the Creator did. The Creator is very forgiving. The Creator always allows. Yeah, there are rules. There are medicine rules. And the medicine rules, simply stated, are when you're in innocence, you're forgiven of all things. But once you're in knowledge of, you better watch your step.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like with people, I get lots of people talk to me, send me letters. I mean, they cry their souls, they do things. I look at them sometimes, Otter, and I go, you're so blessed. You have so many wonderful things. Why don't you just be happy being a rabbit? Being a rabbit is okay. You know? It goes to Chief Funnycoops with the Cheyenne, where his big medicine was the chickadee medicine. Because what's a chickadee, right? Everyone who comes out and takes Indian names is Roaring Eagle or Thunder Bear or, you know, Lightning Buffalo. I mean, you know. Well, Funny Coop said, you know, remember the wisdom of the chickadee. The chickadee goes into everybody's house. He knows everybody. He can walk up and down the tree. Both ways. He can walk sideways. The chickadee is never attacked by anybody. And the chickadee knows everybody's secrets. And the chickadee never judges. And when the eagle comes back to his nest and the chickadee is sitting in the nest, they don't fight. The eagle doesn't kill the chickadee. And so the chickadee, you can sit and gather all the wisdom from because he knows everybody's secrets. You know, so what's wrong with being the chickadee? Why do you have to be Thunder Eagle and Roaring Bear? I mean, why? You know, what's wrong with being a squirrel? What's wrong with being a mouse? You know, unless you're living up to an image.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're fed this image every day. We all have to be Bruce Willis and Julia Roberts, you know. And if we're not, well, life gets bad. I mean, if you're going to go out there in the West, you have to be Kevin Costner. He probably wouldn't have made it, people. Okay? The thing is, why don't we stop judging ourselves? Why don't we start going back to, you know, every day get up, look at the little things, look at the fact that, oh, wow, there was a flood, but my house is still here. Oh, my goodness. Everybody got sick. But, you know, if we didn't get sick, we would have gone to this thing and this would have happened. You know that saying, and it used to frustrate me, well, obviously, God has prevented you from doing this because he has something else in mind.
End of part one. Please refer to program notes for the scheduled date and time of part two. Thank you for supporting Prophecy Keepers Radio with your tax-deductible offerings to the Oklava Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace.
Let the truth be known to all mankind.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Let the truth